I want to welcome everybody to another episode of Rubbing is Racing. I am your host, Mr. CJ Sports. In the studio with me, as always, my co-host, Steve Big Sweat Billmeyer. How are you doing today, Steve?
Doing great, CJ, doing great. It's been a good weekend. Looking forward to what's coming up.
Very, very much excited. Definitely looking forward to what's coming up. Just found out this morning that Shorty and myself got approved from Homestead, so we're going to try to make plans to be down there for the final race of the season, which things got shuffled up a little bit this weekend. I was left kind of speechless, and I was kind of left kind of speechless twice. I'll be honest, the winner of the race, after the first round of pit stops, I didn't see that one coming, and one of the most dominating cars of the chase and the latter part of the season is not going to advance to the next round. So, not quite what we expected, but I guess another part, we kind of not surprised on 50% of what this field is made up of, being how they perform most of the season. It's, you know, it's funny, we talked a little bit about it and talked about the surprise of them not winning a race at this point, but I guess we should have... We should have looked at the bigger picture and knowing that Joe Gibbs Racing owns 50% of the final eight. So things are about to get real interested here. Talladega. We'll start with the I don't know. I seen a lot of comments that it was a boring race, blah, 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 blah. I want to get your opinion and thoughts on the race. And I'm going to give my thoughts as well.
Well, it depends on what you classify as a boring race, really. To me, I have, you know, no trouble following what's going on and seeing things going on in the pack of cars as they race, other than just a group of cars going around in a circle waiting for something to happen. You kind of have to dig a little deeper and pay a little closer attention to what's going on, because there's not a lot of on-track action at Talladega, and when it is, it's usually pretty big. So, you know, to the average fan, yeah, it probably was kind of boring, but no, not more so than most any other restrictor plate race, and I didn't feel it, you know. Typical Sunday afternoon at Talladega to me.
I understand we didn't have the big one, and I know that's unfortunately what most, or what am I going to say most, but a lot of fans look for. I am not one. I'm glad to see these guys be able to finish some of these races without tearing up millions of dollars. Yes, it sometimes it's interesting to see who makes it and everything else. I would rather them show their skill set off and not have the big one and not tear up a bunch of stuff and not potentially hurt somebody and them actually make it all the way through. And so I don't know if that was part of what the fans or some of the fans were upset about. I didn't find it to be boring. Yes, anytime we go to these restrictor plate races, we're going to have our periods of the race where it goes single file. Yes, there's not as much action. They're trying to, you know, kind of rest and take a break because they know you get in that last 50 laps or so, and we even heard them mention the last 100 laps, but even more the last 50, 30 laps or so, they're going to have to be up on that wheel. So they're going to rest and kind of lay back for a little bit. But to say the race was boring when we watched one of the most dominating cars of the season have engine failure and kind of change the whole dynamic of the rest of this chase, to watch Joey Logano, who was on the bubble and eventually went on to win the race, to watch him drag a jack all the way around the track and not tear up nothing and gets to serve his penalty as they take the jack out, to Brad Keselowski having one of the most dominating cars to having his issue, and to watch the post-race, and we're going to talk a little bit about that as well with Kurt Busch and Kevin Harvick. I don't know how you can quite say it was a boring race. It might not have had the big one. We might not have had Dale Jr. out there. I mean, God, we had him in the studio, people. I'm not sure how anybody can label it a boring race.
No, it was pretty much what you would expect of an elimination race in one of the chase rounds. I mean, there were drivers that made it in that were on the bubble, two drivers that are tied for the most wins this season that were eliminated. This is what the chase is about. This is the excitement and drama that the chase creates, and this is what NASCAR wanted, and I think they got what they wanted, and I think it was what the fans wanted too, if you look beyond the fact that there wasn't a big one or a lot of on-track action. I would have liked to have seen, and would still like to see, more passing,
mm-hmm.
you know, especially when you get down in the closing laps, inside the last 10 laps, instead of everybody riding and holding their position, afraid to move out and, you know, drop back and lose a bunch of positions. I just think there ought to be some way they can make it so you can pass and bring the slicing and dicing back into racing at the super speedways.
Speaking of Joe Gibbs Racing, as I mentioned, that is four of the eight in the next round. They kind of all hung out back, except Denny Hamlin. He had to finish at a certain position, which he ended up tying Austin Dillon, but getting the tiebreaker. But had to finish at a certain position to get into the next round. The rest of the guys, they got to just chill in the back and really did not have a lot to really worry about. They were more of points racing. Best strategy, I know that it's been criticized, and I know there's people out there that thinks NASCAR should have done something, something about giving their all 100% or whatever. I don't have a problem with it. To me, that's just like you getting into week 15 or 16 of the NFL, and you're already locked into the playoffs, and you're already locked into your seed. You start playing your backup quarterbacks, and you start playing up your backup backup line, you know, linemen and running backs. So I have no problem with them kind of staying out of trouble, not tearing up anything, not doing anything to cause any harm to themselves, and just kind of hang out in the back for the day and advance into the next round. Did you have an issue with what they did?
Yeah, you know, if I'm a Kyle Busch fan and I come to Talladega, I pay my money to see Kyle Busch race. I don't pay my money to watch him ride around in 30th and, you know, avoid trouble and avoid any kind of issue. I don't think that's what it's about. I think, you know, it's called racing for a reason. And you're there in the race, and I would expect the driver to go all out and, you know, try to get the best position, if not a victory, that he can. But I understand the team strategy behind it, too. I mean, you know, why take a chance on wasting a car or hurting your driver or something else happening?
And not only that, they also made sure that was three spots that Denny Hamlin didn't have to worry about. And they, you know, they were comfortable with where they were at and knew where they had to finish.
Yeah, definitely so. And, you know, it's good team strategy. From a fan standpoint, I'm not in agreement with it. I don't see where riding around in the back really cures anything. But, you know, it works for Gibbs Racing, so we'll see what happens from here on out.
Now, going into this weekend, a lot of us had Keselowski as the favorite. He needed this track last year to get into the next round. He got into the next round. Won at Talladega early this year, won at Daytona earlier this year. Was really the favorite going into this race. Had a very strong car. Debris on the track, got on the grill, heated the car. I know they said plus 15 at one point. He tried to get in line, get the debris off, got the debris off, but it looked like it was a little too late. Now, when they talk plus 15, are they just talking simply 15 degrees over the red mark? What is plus 15, and how far can these drivers push it before we see an issue like Keselowski end up having?
Well, water boils at 212 degrees, so that's the point you would think where a car would start to overheat when the water boils in an engine and it creates air pockets where water can't get, and that makes a hot spot and that makes the whole system fail due to the overheating. But these cars run, the radiator caps that they run are pressure rated at like 22 to 24 pounds of pressure. Well, on your standard street car, it's rated at like 6 to 8 pounds of pressure. So that extra pressure forces that water into the every nook and cranny in the block to get water to cool all the metal that it can. And it's a fine line where you draw that line. There's a certain temperature the engine needs to be to run efficiently, to run at peak performance. And once it gets to that red mark, wherever it's set on your water temperature gauge, you start running into problems because you're going to start boiling the water and creating the air pockets. So being at plus 15, I would guess was their red line was probably 220 degrees, and they were probably running 235 degrees, which is hot, but it's not critically hot. I mean, these engines will handle upwards of 240 degrees of water temperature. It's just when you start getting that hot, you start facing material failures. Gaskets and rubber seals and things of that nature, and I think they just kind of pushed it too far, and then with the amount of tape over the grill with just barely enough air in there to keep that engine running cool at race speed on the track, the airflow as much as they need without having to tape up or untape more of the grill than they needed. I think they just had it so closed off that once it got hot, they couldn't get enough air to it to cool it back off, and it caused a failure.
Now, qualifying, and I'll backtrack a second, qualifying was kind of an interesting event for Joe Gibbs Racing, as they pulled three of the four cars back, and they got another look at what exactly was NASCAR looking for. Did they ever say? And if the cars passed the inspection the first time, what changed to make them have to go back and things get re-looked at?
I never heard what the issue was with the Gibbs cars. I never heard anything about it definitive to say what NASCAR was looking for or anything. I would imagine it would have something to do with the stance of the car, either the rake in the body or the alignment of the front and rear axles, whether the tires were tracking true or not. I just I never really heard. I was trying to find out, but I haven't seen or heard anything as to what NASCAR was looking for. But these teams have figured out a way to get that rear end to shift right at speed, which kind of grabs the car and makes that right rear tire track in the same line as the right front, and that improves the handling. So there's something in there. NASCAR's not talking about it much, but there's something there they're looking for, and they're trying to find a remedy for to keep these teams from letting that rear end move around.
Now, we watched in the first round of qualifying, Reed Sorensen lay down a lap that was not ever beat in any of the rest of the rounds, but obviously when he got in the round of 12, all that gets reset, so it doesn't really matter. But his second round was nowhere close to duplicating it. As a matter of fact, he was slow by extreme amount. What did they do to set up that car that made it so strong that first round and was the fastest in the first round that ended up being the exact opposite in the second round?
There's not much that's going to change at Talladega between rounds of qualifying. Tire wear is really not an issue there. The tire is so hard, you're not giving up that much when the tire starts to wear. And there's no great improvement to traction with a new set of tires. The only thing I can think of is driver error. He hit all his marks right and made an excellent lap the first round, and he just didn't drive as good a lap the second round, and it cost him. It's, you know, when you're talking hundredths of a second, it doesn't take much to get off and not lay down a good lap and be beat.
Now, before we get farther into the race and post-race, what were some of the key things that you noticed, especially in the first part of the race, that you felt that was important to discuss?
One of the neat things I saw was Denny Hamlin's green flag pit stop. He came into pit road on the green by himself, mm-hmm. which is considered a no-no at the super speedways. The prevailing wisdom is you have to have a drafting partner when you pit so you can stay relevant to the lead pack of cars. But Denny pitted by himself. Ahead of everybody else. Then the pack caught him, but as the pack caught him, they peeled off to go to pit road. So these cars that were in front of him were suddenly behind him, and anyway, he picked up, I don't know, 15 spots or something after the pit stops had cycled through just on thinking about, you know, somebody figured out a way to beat that system, mm-hmm. and it worked out good for him, and I thought it was great. I thought it was the best move of the race.
And speaking of drafting, I sat there and watched Brad Keselowski do something that to me was rather impressive. I don't know if he was quite as impressed, but most of the time when we start seeing cars, especially these super speedways, or more specifically these super speedways, You need somebody to go with you. And here I'm sitting there watching Brad go down to the bottom of the track and pick cars off one, sometimes two at a time, all by himself, to eventually he took the lead pretty much by himself. What was he able to do so he didn't need somebody to go with him? And is that driver, is that horsepower, is that both that made him be able to accomplish what he did? Because to me that was rather impressive. It was most of the time, you jump out of line, unless you get somebody to go with you, you're going to the back, and we're going to have to see you work your way back through this field again.
He did a good job of timing, you know, his moves. He had clean air, which was a giant help for him. And you just have to kind of time your movements as to the momentum of the car, where the car is picking up speed as it slingshots off the corners, as opposed to where it starts digging in, going into the corner, and losing speed there. It's just a case of hitting that mark at the right time and using your momentum to carry you past the car you're going to pass and then get back in line before you lose too much momentum in the pack runs you back down.
A couple cars that showed some kind of strength at different points. Ryan Blaney, Chase Elliott. There was a couple of those guys that kept flirting with the front. Chase Elliott kept getting the lead a few different times. Just didn't seem that they had the setup to keep themselves up front. As a matter of fact, it was only a few cars that really seemed that they were set up. Once they got out front, they were going to hold it. Everybody else, it seemed like they could hold it for a lap or two, but it didn't take much to disrupt things or for somebody to get that run on them and pass them.
Yeah, that's the thing. You get you get out ahead of somebody and another car comes up behind you and bumps you in the back, and it, that sudden thrust of momentum pushes you right on past the guys you're racing side by side with. That has a lot to do with shaking up the field lap after lap, and the side draft yesterday was really important and really came into play, being able to use the side draft to get around cars. The guys that are good at that really showed their strength yesterday.
I spoke a little bit earlier of Joey Logano, first pit stop. Jack doesn't come from underneath the car. He takes that jack all the way around 2.66 miles. And he was trying his hardest to shake that thing loose. Have you ever seen a jack make it all the way around a super speedway like that, even with a driver trying as hard as he was trying to shake that thing loose from underneath that car?
No, I've never seen one do a full lap. But then again, with the new rules package where there's no minimum frame height, they're getting these cars just down on the ground as close as they can. And there's an opening cut in the side skirt for that jack to fit in to get under that jack stop. And it's a pretty close cut as to the size of that opening compared to the size of the jack. And the jack man's really got to be on his game to get that jack in that hole and get that car jacked up at the beginning of a pit stop. And I think the jack man was just a little slow, or the jack just got caught up just a little bit, or might not have released and let itself down fully. But that was all it took for that, for the seat of the jack to hang on that jack stop and hook that jack where it wouldn't come out. It was definitely a first for me, though. I had never seen that, never seen a jack make a full lap.
It was funny, I'm not going to lie. I was sitting there like, please just stay underneath. Do not bring out the caution. Do not bring out the caution. Going into this race, I felt that it was going to be Brad Keselowski's win at the cost of Logano. Logano would have found himself on the outside because of Brad Keselowski jumping him. And so that's kind of why I was, rooting that. Other than I didn't want anybody else to have to suffer, because this was all going on during pit stops. And I didn't want anybody to gain an unfair advantage because his team screwed up and the car took off with the jack. But I tell you what, that whole lap, I was sitting there yelling, screaming, hooting, hollering, hoping that jack would not fall from underneath that car, even because he was got to go back in regardless. So there was no point of having to discipline or hurt anybody else's day because he had to come back in anyway.
Yeah, the thing I was wondering about is, I was thinking, well, if that jack comes loose, it's not just going to slide down the track. It's going to become a projectile and create a serious problem for somebody following behind him, but it all worked out in the end, so no harm, no foul.
Austin Dillon ties Denny Hamlin. Obviously, Denny Hamlin's third place finish gets the tiebreaker for this round, but put a great effort into it. Almost made it into the next round. Kind of impressed with what Austin Dillon is doing. Slowly but surely getting better every season. Next year, maybe we'll see him in the round of eight, but now they get a focus and look towards next year. Martin Truex, they didn't make it. Chase Elliott didn't make it. I forget who the fourth driver was that did not make it this round. Who was the fourth driver that did not make it?
I'm trying to think. Austin Dillon, Chase Elliott, Brad Keselowski, and Martin Truex.
There you go. I don't know. Advancing to the next round, Logano, all four Gibbs, Kurt Busch, Kevin Harvick, and Jimmy Johnson, if I'm correct. Isn't that our four? Or our eight?
Yeah.
So four Gibbs cars out of eight. You got two Stuart Haas, one Penske, and one Hendrick Motorsports. Really kind of the drivers for the most part that we kind of expected going into the season. Really not too many surprise names up there. Kurt Busch and Kevin Harvick. I guess most of us missed what actually happened during the race. We seen Kurt Busch rub up on Kevin Harvick post-race, in the cool-down lap. And we saw Kevin Harvick kind of shove into the window of Kurt Busch to kind of show his displeasure. Did you happen to see what actually caused this whole thing? And is this another one of those things that this motivates? Is this... I don't know. There's a lot of this going around when it comes to Kevin Harvick. And in the back of my mind, it makes me wonder, are you already knowing your mind you're going somewhere else? With Stuart Haas going to Ford, I know that Kevin Harvick extended his contract already, but we also know that he's a Chevy guy. And it makes me wonder what you said about the crew earlier this year, right before the chase. Now you're getting confrontations with your fellow teammates. Is in the back of his mind, is he starting to already check out? Is there other plans?
No, I think he's just that single-minded, that focused on winning the championship, that it doesn't register that that was his teammate that he was trading paint with. It was another car to him, another position he had to beat. And I think he overreacted. I don't think he really had that big a reason to get all that upset about it. I mean, it wasn't that big a deal. It's, you know, just trading paint at Talladega, nothing more. But he kind of blew it out of proportion. And, you know, who knows the way Harvick thinks. You know, it might have been a head game he's trying to play with some of the other competitors, letting them know, you know, that he is a bad boy and he's going to be tough to beat these final races. So I think it's gotten kind of blown out of proportion. I was impressed that Kurt Busch responded with a level head. He didn't get all excited about it or anything. So I'm sure it'll all get hashed out tomorrow morning in the driver crew chiefs meeting, and they'll go on about their business next weekend.
Now I got a curious question. If it was Kyle Busch that was the odd man out, had to race his way into the round like Denny Hamlin did, didn't get a cruise back with the rest of the guys, and knowing the threats of the defending champion, do you think that the 11, 19, and 20 car go with the same strategy, or do you think that they try to prevent Kyle Busch to get into the next round? I'm kind of curious, does the driver make the difference when team orders gets laid out? Like, I'm not saying that's what happened, but I would think that was part of the reason why they hung out the back was to help make it that much easier for to get them all four cars into the next round. Like I said, I know it's not the whole reason, but it's got to be part of the reason, I would think anyway. If you are Carl Edwards, Matt Kenseth, or Denny Hamlin, are you hanging around back, or are you trying to make sure that the one of the most dangerous drivers in all of NASCAR right now possibly doesn't make the next round?
I don't know that really came into play in their minds, but yeah, there's a certain amount of friendship that might carry over as to how you raise somebody, but in that deal, I'm sure it was just strictly team orders to stay together, stay out of trouble, stay in the back. We're already advanced to the next round, so no need to put ourselves in any kind of jeopardy racing at the front at Talladega. So I think it was just strictly orders from higher up at JGR, and they followed the plan because it suited them. You know, the drivers are thinking, well, yeah, you're right. There's no reason to take a chance on anything at this point in the chase. So I think it's what Joe Gibbs wanted to accomplish. He's got all four teams in the final eight. It'll be interesting to see if any of them advance down to Homestead.
Let's say we got the next three races. Let's say they're all Joe Gibbs winners. Oh, you got Kyle. Let's make Kyle. Well, it don't matter. You got three of the four already locked into the next round, and you got one guy that's got to race his way, obviously, into the next round. Do we see similar team orders? If those three guys don't need to sweat getting into the next round. They're already in Homestead. They don't need to tear up nothing. They don't need to get in the way of their teammate. Do you think we see the same kind of orders?
I would think so from a team that's already locked in. If one of the Gibbs cars wins Martinsville coming up, you would think that team would run the last two races in that round trying to do something or find something to help one of their other teammates get into the next round. But they're going to take care of themselves first. They're going to make sure they're good before they try to make one of their teammates good.
We got four Joe Gibbs racing cars in this round. Of course, three races to get us down to four. What do you think the odds are? Do we see an all Gibbs final four, or is that a little far stretch, especially with Logano and Kevin Harvick still being in there? And I guess we can't count out Jimmy Johnson. I don't want to disrespect Kurt Busch, but he's been consistent. But if I had to say, will I see four Joe Gibbs racing car, or will I see three and one Kurt and Kurt Busch? I think I would say I would see four Joe Gibbs racing cars.
I don't see four Joe Gibbs cars. I don't even, if Kurt Busch wins a race, I don't see any Joe Gibbs cars in the final four. I think they were strong during the regular season, but I think they've peaked. And I don't see any momentum being built there, especially after this weekend. So, if Kurt Busch doesn't win a race, and I see Denny Hamlin advancing to the final four, but that would be about it. I just see a whole lot left from the Joe Gibbs bunch.
You know, what's great about Talladega and even Daytona, we get to talk about names that we don't always talk about. We got to talk about resourcing. Earlier in the show, with the lap he put down, Brian Scott in a second place finish. Ricky Stenhouse even found himself in the top five. Ryan Blaney and Chase Elliott, 11th, 12th. We talked about them already a lot this year. Michael McDowell, 16th. Trevor Bainen found himself up there and towards the front there a few times. The top 17 finish. Danica wrapped out the top 20. 21, Landon Castle, and 23rd, I'm sorry, Chris Buescher. But I tell you what, that's got to be one of the, I think, the better things about Talladega and Daytona, especially Talladega, that I think a lot of people don't take out of these kind of weekends, that we get an opportunity for those lower funded teams, those guys that don't usually hang around front, lucky to even be mid-20s most of the time. They get their opportunity. Sometimes they find themselves out front, sometimes they avoid the big one and can win one, but they get an opportunity. Alex Bowman, another name, until they end up having problems. But these big tracks gives these smaller teams and these drivers that are still working on building their name an opportunity to kind of have the day in the sun. And this is one of those things that I like about these super speedways.
Yeah, the super speedways, the nature of the beast is a great equalizer. By the time the race rolls around, you're getting 100% out of your car and out of your engine package and everything. So it basically, it's one of the few tracks where it strictly comes down to the driver and to an extent the pit crew making the right calls and pitting at the right time, but it's mostly the driver, since all the cars are pretty close to equal. The driver's going to be the one that makes or breaks the race for you and makes the moves that'll put you in position to be there at the end. So
it's definitely a drive race, and that's one of the things I like about it. I mean, you know, it's the closest thing you can get, really, to the old IROC series, where you've got all the cars on pretty close to equal footing, and it comes down to the better driver having the better finish.
We start gearing up for Martinsville. We go from really one extreme to really the other as we start race one of the next round. How hard is it for these guys, or how much preparation do you go from changing your mindset from a 2.66 mile super speedway to the short paperclip at Martinsville? And what are we going to see at Martinsville?
It's hard to say what we're going to see. It's going to be an interesting show, I'm sure. It'll probably be a deal of JGR against the rest of the field. Everybody knows that they've got the most cars representing their brand in there. And it's going to be interesting to see who advances from that. But at the same time, there's so many non-chasers that are capable of winning that race that it could upset the whole apple cart. Non-chaser wins, well, then that cuts down an available spot for one of the chase drivers. So, it's going to be a lot going on. It's definitely going to be one of the most interesting races of the season to see how it kicks off the final round.
Now, I want to backtrack for a second, and I meant to ask this earlier, and we started talking about something else on that while we was in that topic, and I forgot to ask. Talking about the Joe Gibbs Racing guys hanging out in the back and kind of having two somewhat different point of views. I don't think we totally disagreed, but I think both of us had different directions of where we saw this. NASCAR, though, is there something NASCAR should do? Is there something that NASCAR can do? Or is this just part of the strategy that these teams have figured out? Especially like this opportunity that those three guys had, that should be left alone and let it be part of the sport. Do you, as someone that's been around the sport for a very long time and wants to see all the guys out there giving their 100%, do you feel that NASCAR needs to find a way to police that, or should it be left alone?
Well, they need to police the competition aspect of it. But, yeah, I think everybody understood this was a strategy move by JGR to get their cars out of trouble and advance to the next round. NASCAR does have a rule now that as soon as you're supposed to race 100% throughout the event, this rule was brought in for the Michael Waltrip deal at Richmond, to prevent that future and to have some kind of guideline in place. NASCAR implemented a rule that says you need to be given 100% the whole time you're on a track to keep you from falling off, to enable your teammate or a friend of the team to advance their position at your expense. But and NASCAR said they didn't feel like that rule was violated yesterday by the JGR cars because it was a strategy call and it was a conscientious effort made to race that way throughout the whole race. They just all of a sudden didn't lay down and let Denny Hamlin pick up three spots when it became evident he was going to need them. They were in that position pretty much all day, so NASCAR didn't have a problem with it, so personal feelings aside, I'm not going to have a problem with it either.
Like I said, and to start off the show, all in all, you know, I don't feel it was a boring race. I think that, you know, it's a 500-mile race. It's 266 or 2.66 miles. It takes them like 50 seconds to go around the lap. It's not like they're completing a lap every 15, 30 seconds. And, you know, it's drafting. There's parts where they kind of relax. But everything that went along in this race, the different strategies, I guess that's why it blows my mind that I've seen this conversation on Facebook so much and so many people complaining. Just all the different aspects we talked about, the confiscating of parts on part of the Joe Gibbs Racing team, to watching, you know, what happened with Joe Logano, what happened with Martin Truex, what happened with Keselowski, the little scuffle with, you know, Kurt Busch and Kevin Harvick, the different strategy, the three Joe Gibbs Racing guys hanging out in the back, just everything that went on in the complete weekend and the complete race, and be able to sit here and talk about different drivers that we don't necessarily get to talk about. And then you have technically a tie for the eighth spot, and it came down to who had a better finish, you know, better finish in this round. I just don't see how anybody could have labeled anything about Sunday as boring.
Well, if your mindset is the on-track action and it doesn't happen, of course it becomes a boring race for you, but you have to kind of open your mind, pay more attention to what's going on, more of the little things that are happening, the jockeying for position and which guys are hooking up with which guys and who's faster as a push car, as a lead car. I mean, there's a lot of stuff going on. It doesn't jump out and grab your attention. You got to kind of look for it, but when you start finding these things, the race gets a lot more interesting that way.
Goodness. I guess, I don't know. Every time that I seen a post on Facebook and people talking about it, I just kind of rolled my eyes. Like I said, I understand that I've seen more exciting races, but I've seen more exciting than a lot of things. You know, you want to talk about boring, and so NFL is my second favorite sport, so don't anybody take this the wrong way, but we watched a pro football game last night. The Seattle Seahawks and the Arizona Cardinals have a tie. Neither team even scored a touchdown, only scored 3 points in four quarters, and then both kicked a field goal in overtime and couldn't hit a game-winning field goal. Then you just had a bunch of grown men. Well, you got 52 players on each team. So you had 104 players shake hands and walk off the field and say, oh, well, we tied. No winners. We're going home. So everybody has their day in the sun in every sport. But this, to me, by no far the stretch of the imagination, was boring. If you want to talk about boring, sitting through last night's NFL game with the Arizona Cardinals and the Seattle Seahawks, that was boring.
Yeah. I've been to Michigan and been to a caution-free race up there, and, you know, that's a pretty boring race, too, and there's nothing happening all day long.
Oh, did I miss anything else that you wanted to point out from this weekend or yesterday's race?
No, not really. You know, there wasn't a whole lot to cover, really, in typical Talladega fashion.
Race
was what it was. It, you know, I'm watching it. I'm glad it's over. I'm looking forward to Martinsville. You won't hear people Monday complaining that Martinsville was a boring race. I just don't see that happening.
Should the fans be upset? I mean, not upset, but should the fans appreciate it more that they managed to go? Cause I think part of the reason I didn't find it boring, and I guess I appreciated it more, is we didn't have the big ones. To me, I appreciated, and I guess is why I don't, like I said, don't find it as boring as maybe some other of the fans, is I appreciate the fact that I watched 40 drivers go at 200. I think they clocked, what, Stewart at the fastest at 206, if I recall correctly.
Yeah.
Watching these drivers do 200-plus miles an hour, and not wreck. And what little wreck there was, what? There was Casey Kane at one point in time that slid sideways in front of a whole bunch of cars and everybody missed it. Everybody, for the most part, did a really good job. Yeah, there was a time or two. Even Alex Bowman, I think, that didn't really tangle up much. And then it was the three-car pileup as you got right before with it involved Casey Mears and, I don't know, maybe Jeffrey Earnhardt and someone else that one. I can't remember if that's who was all involved that one. But for the most part, as close as they are, because people don't understand the speeds they're going, and listen to them say, first to 40th is only 1 second apart. You got to understand, that's 40 cars going 200 miles an hour that are less than a second apart from the beginning of the pack to the very end of the pack. And to watch them be able to do 500 miles and, well, a little over 500 miles with the overtime, but 500 miles and there be very minimum, to me, that's impressive. That to me, I would take that any day over having to watch a bunch of big ones and kind of just like, what are these guys doing? Where do these guys get their license from? Kind of comments to myself.
Yeah, you don't get that sensation of speed watching it on TV. It looks easy, you know, it looks like they're just cruising around, but these guys are running 190 plus mile an hour. The car's dancing all around on the track and they're trying to hold it in one spot, and it takes a lot of effort and a lot of concentration to be able to do that lap after lap after lap. Oh, until something happens, you don't get that sensation of speed, and then when something does happen, when something does happen, by the time your brain registers, hey, there's a problem, you're in it, or you're past it. I mean, it's already happened and gone. So, it's a lot different deal to be out there on the track than it is the way it looks on TV.
Does a Chase representative take Martinsville next week? And if not, if so, who do you think it is? If not, who do you have winning the race next weekend?
I think Jimmy Johnson would be the one to beat at Martinsville. He's proven he can run there before. He's won there before, and he's going to be tough to beat again. But on the other hand, Denny Hamlin's team has got a lot of momentum going right now, and that's kind of considered one of his home tracks. So one of those two would be my pick to take that race. I think Denny and Six
time
both have the best chances out of anybody there.
Now, I can't argue too badly with that. I think we kind of see the same thing we saw last year. I think we watched Joey Logano kind of take momentum into Martinsville. Of course, Martinsville is where Matt Kenseth retaliated and would have been Logano's like fourth straight win in the Chase. I think we kind of duplicate that. I think that talking about carrying momentum, I think that, yeah, if things wouldn't have played out the way they did, I think Logano wouldn't have won the race. I think it was Keselowski's or even possibly Truex's to lose. But that's how the cards unfolded, and now you got someone else with some momentum going into next week. And knowing his notes from last year and knowing what they were able to accomplish or what was going they were going to accomplish, I think Logano is your guy next week. As much as I don't want it to happen, I just think that's how it's going to play out. Thursday night, let the fans know where they can find you, what we got planned for Racing with Big Sweat, brought to you by Snafu Seasoning, and let them know about the most wonderful Facebook group in all of Facebook land.
Definitely. Come check out our Facebook group, NASCAR and Other Racing. We're not limited just to NASCAR racing. We cover World of Outlaws, IHRA, Formula One, IndyCars. We look at all types of racing. We have all types of racing fans in our group. We have race threads on the televised races where we all get together and talk during the race. We really have a good time, and it's really a positive deal if you like racing and you're interested in talking racing and want to learn about racing, and not necessarily just somebody that wants to badge drivers or anything like that. Come join us. We're 7,000 members strong, and we'd love to have 7,001. So all it takes is a click of the button, so give us a chance. You want to check out what's happening with me on Twitter, go to Big Sweat 4, where I'm known as the NASCAR Heartbreaker and Home Wrecker. I don't get on Twitter much, but when I do, it's usually something interesting, I guarantee you that. And Thursday nights at 9 o'clock, Mr. Chris Yellow Caution Flag, Creighton, and myself sit down and host Racing with Big Sweat, where we talk about the local short track drivers and the local short track scene and what's happening across the country on the dirt tracks and on the quarter mile ovals and such as that. These are the guys we want to showcase and we want to talk about, and that's who we have on. Coming up this Thursday night, we've got two championship drivers already lined up to sit in with us. Mr. Dallas Mozingo, Outlaw Super Truck driver, and midget sprint car driver Steven Shebester, hang out with us and talk to us, so tune it in. We'll have a flyer up on the group page and on various other group pages, showing you the links to listen in, or you can call the studio number and listen in through there. But check it out. We have a good time. We have a lot of fun, and we like talking short track racing. So Thursday night's 9 o'clock. It's Racing with Big Sweat.
Ha, 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 ha. Got an interesting show lined up for you guys this week. First of all, the reason we moved this up to 6 o'clock tonight, the 110 Nation Sports Show, goes to 3 hours tonight. We are going to be on from 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. There we go. Every Monday through Wednesday. Like I said, we got approved for Homestead, so we got 3 weeks to get that worked out. Next weekend, the 29th, next Saturday, I'm supposed to be out of Charlotte, the World of Outlaws. We're going to see if we can make that happen as well. Not 100% sure if finances are going to let me make that happen. Guess why? Tonight, we're not sure if it's 8:30, 9 o'clock. The time was not confirmed, but we have ARCA Series Rookie of the Year, Dalton Sargent, joining us. Tomorrow night, we got Rev Racing, Drive Diversity Program driver Allie Kern joining us. And Wednesday night, we got Driver Diversity Program driver Hope Hornish, yes, Sam Hornish's daughter, is going to be joining us Wednesday night. Very excited about having her join us here in the studio on the 110 Nation Sports Show. So make sure you guys check that out. Shows start off at 7 o'clock, all times, Eastern Standard, all Monday through Wednesday, with the 110 Nation Sports Show. You guys can check us out on Facebook, 110 Nation Sports. Check us out on Twitter, at 110 Nation. Make sure you guys check out our blog site, www.the110nationsports.com, for all the latest going on here at the 110 Nation. Well, with a few minutes left and me having to jump over and get ready to do the 110 Nation Sports Show here in about 4 minutes, we're going to go ahead and get things wrapped up. I got to make sure I thank Snafu Seasoning, Fit for Life, I-95 Sports Network, Mile High Radio for help make all of this possible. Steve, as always, it's been an honor and a privilege to be hanging out with you here in the studio for Rubbin' Racing. Be looking forward to hanging out with you guys Thursday night, racing with Big Sweat, and look forward to being back here next Monday night, 6 p.m., to talk Martinsville and see whose chase hopes have died.
Always a pleasure being on here with you, CJ. I do appreciate it. I'll talk to you Thursday night on Racing with Big Sweat.
Everybody else, you guys have a great night. Until then.
Night.